You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sure.
Yeah, man, it's the first time we've actually covered somebody on a podcast and had the same person be on the podcast, man. So this is very special.
Yeah, no, it's dope. It's dope. So, you know, I'll give the introduction. Al Harrington started as a basketball legend in our area, in the Tri-State area, right?
Sure.
Changed out of high school,
St. Patrick's,
to the league, and had a great NBA career. And then is having even more success now in the entrepreneurial realm. So he's a perfect guest for us because our show is, the backstory is the financial aspects of sports and entertainment. For the most part, business too, but sports and entertainment, right?
Yeah.
A lot of times people, they look at NBA players, NFL players, actors, but they don't really know what goes on behind the scenes on the financial side, right? And financial literacy is something that, you know, is in season right now, especially in our culture. So it's encouraging to see our growth, Troy, as far as, you know, being one of the top financial podcasts on iTunes in a short period of time.
Yep.
And one of the reasons why we're doing that is because people are interested in sports and entertainment, right?
Yeah, the reason the success is really a testament to how much people need it in our culture. So that's why we're delivering the content at the rate we are. And we're going to keep delivering.
Yeah, not for sure. So we wrote about Al. I wrote about Al early in our Instagram, like early on stages of Instagram.
Yeah.
And it was about, you know, him starting a company, right, called Viola. And it talked about him putting like $5 million into it, and the company blew up, and we'll tell the story. But he liked the post, and he started following us, right? So that's an early support.
Somebody knows us,
so we appreciate it. And then we spoke about him on another podcast, and we spoke about marijuana industry.
Yep.
And now we got him here, so it's full circle. So thank you for coming on.
Hey, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you. So, all right, can you just give the people a quick backstory? I wrote, but I think it's a really dope story as far as to how you got into the marijuana cannabis industry, as far as, you know, starting out with the seed money. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but you couldn't even do it and your name was in your cousin's name, right?
Correct.
Because you ain't want to like cross those lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man, I didn't want to lose my contract.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? But I saw an opportunity that made a lot of sense, and you know, for me it was all about being able to help people. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't about just the financial gain. It was like, wow. You know, so like you said, just to touch on the backstory, you know, we from the same area, so you already know, like, the whole war on drugs. And, you know,
yeah, for sure.
It was explained to us, and, you know, we was taught that, you know, cannabis was a gateway drug.
Mm-hmm.
We saw people getting locked up for having weed and all that. So, you know I ain't want to never get locked up. You know what I'm saying? My mom with my ASS. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't want to be a crackhead either. You know what I'm saying? So, for me, I stayed away from it, you know, as far away from it as I could, but when I got to the NBA, it was the first time that I saw like active players that was actually like killing on a nightly basis, smoking heavy trees.
You know what I'm saying? That's surreal, man.
So that's when I first realized that, yo, we was being lied to.
Yeah.
But it still, you know, it still wasn't for me. You know what I'm saying? Just because you see somebody do something,
right,
I mean, it's for you. You
right.
know what I mean? And
yeah.
I always felt that smoking was just bad for you in general. You know what I'm saying? So I stayed away from it. So throughout my career, like I said, I had teammates that used to smoke heavy. Steven Jackson's one that I could go out there. Matt Barnes, some of the guys that I won't mention now. But, you know, I had teammates that actually used to smoke. So, you know, I would ask them little questions and all that. And they would tell me, like, yo, I smoke because of this. And I smoke because of that. And like I said, it was productive. So it changed the way I thought about cannabis. So, you know, fast forward to when I signed with the Denver Nuggets in 2009 or 10, when I left the Knicks, you know, when I got there, they had just started their medical program or whatever. So, you know, I want them dudes to always read the newspaper, especially with George Karl being my coach. And you see, he's definitely exposed himself since he's stopped coaching.
He did,
the type of asshole that he was. You know what I'm saying? And he was the type of coach that when we won the game, it was because of him. And when we lost, it was our fault. So I used to always read the paper just to see what he would say. But at the same time, I was picking up the newspaper every morning, and it was always something about the benefits of cannabis.
Yeah.
So my grandmother had come to see me play towards the end of my first season there in 2011. And, you know, she got there, she had me put this pill box up on her counter, and she started taking all this medication.
Yeah.
And the athlete in me said, "Grandma, why are you taking so many vitamins?" And she's like, "Boy, these not vitamins." She's like, "I got high blood pressure, diabetes, glaucoma." And I was like, "Grandma, I was just reading the paper the other day that, you know, cannabis helped with glaucoma." And I was telling everything I was reading. And finally she said, "Well, what is cannabis?" And I was like, "You know, marijuana, weed." She's like, "Reefer?" She's like, "Boy, I ain't smoking no reefer. Ain't no way no reefer gonna help me out."
That must have been an ill conversation.
You know what I'm saying? And she's 79 years old at the time, right? And I'm, you know, so I'm starting to educate her, but she shuts me down. So the next day I come home and I had a game. So I come home and shoot around, and she's sitting in my kitchen, and, you know, she's sitting with her hands in her, well, face in her hands. And I'm like, "Grandma, what's up?" And she look up and she's squinting, and she's like, "That's you, baby doll?" She's like, "My eyes hurt so bad today, I could barely see." So I said, "Grandma, you tell me you taking all that medication and you still in pain? Like, it's not working at all?"
Right.
And she's like, "It's hit or miss." So I was like, "Look, this would be our secret." You know what I'm saying? I was like, "Just try it." And, you know, and I believe in God, right? You know, I grew up in church and everything. And, you know, as we all know, like, old people are hard to change their beliefs and their ways. You understand what I'm saying? And my grandmother, I would say all the time, like, if she not going to heaven, we all going to hell. She ain't got a chance. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And not only that, like, she's the backbone of my family, backbone of the church. So, like, I mean, she's so straight and narrow. And for her to say, "Okay, I'll try it," that was God to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was helping me pick what was next for me, which I was blessed, because a lot of players where, you know, you talk about the financial literacy and stuff like that, what sucks is a lot of guys, when they get done playing, they don't know what's next. You know what I'm saying? They're so used to people chasing after them. When that's over, it's just like, it's such a rude awakening. It's just like, you don't know what to do. And a lot of times, you start to spend money to be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how they run through the bag.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, you know, so I talked to her about it or whatever, and she's just like, "You know what? I'm in so much pain today, I'll try anything." So I called my boy. I was like, "Yo, you got to go to the dispensary, get something for, you know, for glaucoma."
Yeah.
And I'm not a smoker at the time, so I don't know what to recommend. I don't know indica, sativa, I don't know nothing. So he bring back Vietnam Kush, and we vaporize it. And this is how we go. We vaporize it for them. You know, and that's harsh.
Yeah.
So I take it in the garage and she starts smoking it, and like she's like blowing it in and blowing it out her nose. Like, perfect. So I'm looking at her like,
"This is your first time?"
I'm like, "Sure, you don't smoke." She's like, "Well, I smoked a cigarette one time when I was 16. And but long story short, you know, she smoked. I took her downstairs. I went and took a nap. I woke up an hour and a half later. And before I got dressed, I said, "Let me go check on her to make sure she's cool."
Yeah.
And I went downstairs and knocked on the door. Her back was to the door and she was looking down. I was like, "Grandma, you good?" And then she turned around. She was crying tears. She was like, "I'm healed." She was like, "You know, I haven't been able to read the words of my Bible in over 3 years."
Wow.
So that's my inspiration. That's my story. That's how I got into cannabis. And, you know, we decided, you know, me and my cousin, who was my business partner, we decided to name the company after her.
Yeah.
Her name is Viola. So that's how we got out. You know, that's our origin story and how we started.
Yeah, now that's dope. If we could just talk about the league for a little bit, because, yeah, you know, we do write a lot of stories in poetry. It's unfortunate, right, where a lot of guys, even Kobe had spoken when he was saying the passion, the problem that a lot of guys have is that they don't know their passion after, right?
Right.
And even if you have a long career, 35, 37, that's still relatively young in life,
and
right?
Yeah.
So, and then I also, shout out to Sebastian, you know, he fell on some hard times. He got convicted, so, you know, we're praying for him. But he had a good clip, too, where he said, you know, he kind of explained how a lot of guys fall into financial hardship because when you get paid, it's not like you get $50 million all at once, right?
Right, right?
We know that there's a jock tax, like every state that you go in, you pay the state tax. And then, you know, you get paid twice a month. Then you have to pay everybody else. And then a lot of times you don't have the financial literacy when you're coming into the league. So, you know, all of your stuff is kind of like out front. Now you got to kind of pay it back, right? Right. So can you just talk about that briefly as far as like, because you were inside. So, you know, as far as like
the difficulties. And you played for multiple teams.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you've been for a few states.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the tax stuff and, you know, that is what it is. And, you know, I got a story of my rookie year. you know, they sent me my taxes to sign or whatever. And, you know, it was like all these books, you know, like yay high. And I looked at it and I didn't know what it was. So I took it and I put it up in my closet. I was staying with Antonio Davis as a rookie. And like 2 weeks later, I came home and he was sitting there and he was signing those same books one day. And when I came in, I'm like, what's up, big fella? He's like, chilling. I'm like, what you doing? He's like, man, I'm signing, you know, paying taxes. Mm-hmm. He's like, you got yours? I was like, yo, I got some books like that a couple weeks ago and they're in my closet. He's like, go get them. So I go get them, bring them. He's like, smack me up behind my head. Like, those your taxes. You gotta sign those.
But you're, at that time, you're, what, 18?
I'm 18.
18 years old, right?
I remember. Well, I just turned 19, man.
Yeah, because you went right.
But you gotta remember that the challenge is this, man. It's like, we first generation money.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. It's like, we didn't learn how to make that money. You understand what I'm saying? We didn't really, I'm not gonna say we didn't earn it, but we definitely earned it. But yeah, we didn't learn how to make it. We didn't run a business. We didn't learn how to balance books and Brian the P&Ls and all that type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's kind of after the fact. And then a lot of times what happened with the players, which sucks, is that we have financial advisors and agents and all that that discourage us to learn how to do that. They just like, pay me, I'll take care.
It keeps it employed.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's the issue that we have is like, no, like, and I learned that after I turned 28 is when I started taking a vested interest in where my money was going, the taxes I was paying, how I was paying taxes, where my money was actually going. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, I was just having fun. And I was just trusting that they had my back. You know what I'm saying? So that responsibility of first money is very tough, man, because, you know, it's nobody in your family you can really go to. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't know. Your mother's, you know, her credit bad, dad credit bad, grandma credit bad. They don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you end up having to trust somebody that you don't know, and you just gotta pray to God that they do you right. You know what I'm saying? And what I was lucky was that I had a financial guy. You know, I ain't gonna lie, when I got done with my rookie deal, so I probably made just under $2 million, right? Over a 4 year span, because I was the 25th pick, so I ain't make as much bread. But like, I had like $30,000 in my name after that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I ain't know. Bought my mother a Lexus, I bought two Benzes, I bought a crib. I ain't know, right? You know what I'm saying? But after that, once that happened, that's when I moved to my new financial advisors and they started teaching me. They were like, look, when you buy this, or they even told me little stuff where, like, you know, if I can't pay for something with cash, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And that was a great mindset to give me. So now I'm not going to go and buy $500,000 cars. Now $2.5 million I owe. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, okay, if I'm going to spend $500, I got to get what I can get for that. You understand what I'm saying? So little things like that is what helped me. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the players, I just say, you know, it takes some time. You know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of got to get your feet in there and start figuring it out or whatever. But I always tell these guys, like, you know, take the time to learn about your money and learn, like, how you're spending it and who's spending it and where it's going and finding out tax breaks and starting non-for-profits. And if you're going to take care of your mom, do it this way. If you're going to take care of your family, do it this way. And, you know, it's very challenging, though. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, like I said, being first-generation money and, you know, a lot of people make you feel like they, like you own. Oh, remember, I took you in. I bought you this. I bought you a bike. I bought you a coat. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And you feel bad. Next thing you know, you're going to spend some bread. You know what I'm saying? So it's tough. But, you know, the good thing about these guys making so much money now.
It's changed.
I think they definitely got more of a window to kind of make some mistakes and still be okay.
That new deal that they signed.
Yeah, that changed.
And
it's going to keep getting better, too.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Now, that's a game changer, and it's important too, because so I'm a financial advisor, choice of teacher, and educator. You don't like teacher. So yeah, I see it firsthand as far as like, all right, there's not a lot of financial advisors that look like me, right? So a lot of some guys in my office, they might work with athletes, things of that nature, and I can just tell they're not looking at them as their peers, because they're not their peers, right? And they're looking at them as a meal ticket, and it's like, okay, when you're done playing, it's over, right? Like, so I think that it's important, like you said, that the athletes have to start empowering themselves or work with people that are interested in empowering them, right? And I think that's one of the good things, even with our platform, is that there's so much information available now, and that's why we definitely want to sit down with you and we'll talk about, you know, your business now in the next segment. But you really have to, you can't, the days of just letting somebody do whatever they want and being blind is over.
Right,
we can't afford that to happen, because we've seen it happen. Every generation, right?
Like, we wrote the article on our Leisure page about Chris Bosh, right? He had a $125 million deal. said he knows nothing about finance.
Or R. Kelly, who said he never walked into a bank. A month ago.
Exactly. It's like, how is that possible?
How is that?
Right? His thing was like, back to Chris Bosh, was like, his main focus is, I have to train, I have to perform, I have to keep my body healthy. That's the only thing I'm focusing on. And it's like, but you're getting paid to do this. Like, that's almost, it's equally as important, right? Like, to say you don't know anything about finance, you just signed a $125 million deal, it's like, it's mind-boggling.
Right.
But it's reality. It's real. It's reality. Yeah. And but the thing about it, not even to put, because nobody really knows anything about finance. I know a lot of doctors that don't know anything about finance.
True.
The difference is that their career is going to be 40 years.
Exactly.
You were fortunate when you had a second contract, right? But what if you didn't have that second contract? Like you said, you had 30,000, now you're out the league. Now you're really screwed.
And you're, 24 at that time?
No, right? Maybe. No, 22.
22, right.
Yeah. So, all right.
My whole life in front of me.
Yeah.
Been disastrous.
All right. So now we're going to go into the business side of things. All right. So, now we're going to talk about, you know, you built an empire.
This is an empire.
Yeah, it's an empire.
In it.
Very impressive. Very impressive. Yeah. So, you know, especially like you said, in our community, right? Unfortunately, there's countless people doing 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years, Fed time, state time for marijuana, right? For marijuana. So now we're in a position where we can actually make money legally off of marijuana, right? So it's one thing, all right, because I get this question a lot, Instagram and people just in general, they're like, how do I get involved in the marijuana business? So you can buy stock, we'll talk about that, but you actually built a company, right? Yeah. So can you just talk about that? Because I'm sure that there's a lot of people, I know for a fact, that there's a lot of people that want to get involved in it, but they don't know how to go about it. They don't know licenses you have to do. They don't know, like, you know, it's just like, that's the problem with our community a lot of times. We don't have mentors.
Right.
We figure it out as we go. Like, you know what I mean? That's why we make so many mistakes.
Exactly.
Because there's no mentorship. There's no blueprint to follow. So it's like, okay, I'm just gonna go out there.
Yeah. I think one of the things you like and what you've done is like you've kind of laid a blueprint for people from what you've been saying. Like I remember watching the HBO Sports special and I was like, wow, this guy literally created a farm and went and planted the seeds himself. I think
that's dope.
That was dope. I was like, one of the best quotes I was like, you said, make sure you're an expert in what you're asking people to do.
Right.
Right? So if I'm going to hire you, trust that I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You want to talk about the Harrington Group?
Yeah, man. It's funny, bro. Like y'all said, man, like I don't really have like a financial background or any of that. Like it was literally like I just took my work ethic that I took from that, how I got into the NBA and played 16 years.
Mm.
Like, you know, my background, I didn't start hooping until I was a freshman in high school.
Really?
Really?
Pro out of high school.
Never played basketball before? Like,
never,
organized?
Never.
Wow.
You know, my mom used to beat me one-on-one all the time.
Yeah, that's hard. That's crazy. You know,
like,
that's
crazy. Even as a freshman, I was hard. I was the worst player on the team as a freshman, and I probably was like the eighth best player as a sophomore on my team.
You went from that to being the player of the year.
Like in 2 years.
Like,
but I lived in the gym. It was work ethic.
Yeah.
I learned like, and thank God I was able to get the results because it showed me what hard work can do for you.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And what I've done is I've taken that same approach into the cannabis industry. So like, if you go back into my office, you see I got a big plaque on my wall that say nobody without workers. You know what I'm saying? Like the reason why I played 16 years was because I sweat every year because I remember my mindset as a rookie. My mindset as a rookie was I was looking at the older dudes and I'm like, I'm taking a job. Like, I'm getting that spot. Like, I got to play.
So
I always remember that was always in the back of my mind as I got older in the league that these rookies that's coming in, these niggas are trying to take my minutes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So, and I take that same thing with cannabis. I'm like, yeah, Viola may be popping or whatever, but like, I don't sleep any better at night. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm still constantly thinking there's another black company coming behind me that's going to try to claim the things that I've done. Or even just regular companies, you know what I'm saying? So that's always my edge, you know what I'm saying? I always can constantly do that. But to answer your question, like, what they've done, and I mean the lawmakers and stuff like that, because they have so many different people influencing their decisions. Because, see, the issue that we have in cannabis right now is that the people that are actually writing the laws don't have any business acumen. They're just politicians.
Yep.
So they're writing these laws and putting these taxes and all these different things, and they're killing the industry. You know what I'm saying? What I think they should have did was they should have went to some of the people that were successful in the black market and used them as consultants.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because it was a thriving industry until y'all stepped in.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So that's that piece. But why it's tough is this. They're trying to monopolize the process, right? And like what you said, you know, our communities was, you know, most impacted on drugs. 85% of all black men drug arrests are cannabis related, You know what I'm saying? And we have no representation in the industry. Right now, with me doing what I'm doing and a couple other people, we represent 1% of the industry. Like, that's ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? And it's tough for me to sit here and tell somebody, like, go do this to create ownership, because it's tough. It's like, you know, you look at New Jersey, some places we're very familiar with, or even New York.
Yeah.
You know, some of the requirements was like, in New York was like, you got to have like 20, 25 years of experience in farming or agriculture. Like, what black person
in New York?
In New York. We don't even own land.
Right. Not one.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. New Jersey was, you know, you had to show $15 to $20 million in workable capital, part of your application process. You understand what I'm saying? So what black person can do that? I'm like, even I struggle getting people to put up money to have 20 in an account.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? That's what all the resources I have. So just imagine somebody up the block. And I'm not saying this to discourage you. What I'm just trying to give you is just like, what's going on, right?
Yeah.
So how I look at it is like, you know, one of the things I want to do is I want to start incubating or whatever for the black communities, right? So what I want to do is I want to get licensed in every state, and I want to build facilities that are big enough that I can allow other black entrepreneurs that want to get into this space an opportunity to come in, perfect the crafts, whether they want to make CBD THC waters, whether they want to make THC mints, whatever it is, I want to give them the platform, the licenses, allow them to be creative and create products, right? That's one way that I feel like I can include more black people, right?
Yeah.
The other way is this, and this is real, because my company right now, right, you know, I would like to, I wish I had more black employees, right? But I promise you, when I put out these job opportunities online, through, you know, all those,
Indeed and all those
other all that stuff,
yeah.
They don't apply.
Wow.
There's nobody applying. You know what I'm saying? So, and I can't figure out what's
what
the issue.
Jobs, like, what kind of jobs are there?
Whether it's, you know, whether it's working in the farm or in the grow, being a grower, being a packager, and this is going to be my point. You got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You got to put your ego aside if you want to get into this industry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I know so many people, bro. I probably know so many people that have started off as packagers that now own dispensaries. They're not black.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, yeah. they went through the whole process, learn every part of the business. You know what I'm saying? And then figure it out. Because at the end of the day, what I will tell you is that if you do that, you're going to be valued with somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I wish I could run into somebody that say, yeah, I've packaged, I've grown, I've this, that, and the third. Like, I'm hiring you ASAP. That's all the experience I need. Because of the way my company is kind of set up, we wear multiple hats. You know what I'm saying? Our attitude is like, everybody do a little bit of everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't have no problem going to clean the bathroom. Dead ass.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just how I operate. When they see me doing it, everybody knows it's not beneath anybody to go in and have to operate like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, so one of the things is just, I would just say, you know, look at applying to get into the industry. Maybe you can't get ownership right now out the gate. You know, I would say that this industry is going to be like liquor, where liquor has over 40,000 brands. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be the same thing in cannabis. So maybe right now in 2019 or 2020, you don't get your ownership in something. But 2021 is always going to be opportunity, because it's just going to be just like the liquor industry. You'll have craft beers. You'll have all these different things. So I would just tell, you know, all the entrepreneurs or people that want to try to figure out how to get in, is just go get a job, man. Get a job in the space.
So, you know what I'm saying? You guys are, Vial Extracts operates in 4 states, right? California, yeah. Oregon, Michigan, and Colorado?
Yes.
So when you say, like, people are applying to do jobs, like, the farming would be in Oregon, or the farming
would be in Oregon. So, like, you know, so my farm is, like, where it's at. I don't think a lot of black people there anymore.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. Like, that's just because of the geographic location, you know what I mean? But in Colorado, yes, California for sure. Mm-hmm. Michigan, 1,000%.
You know, is that your newest one? Michigan's the newest one, right?
Our newest place,
okay,
or whatever. So we're opening up our retail in the next 15 days. So
excited
about that. That's our first retail operation.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, like, what I was telling you, was like, I'm learning every part of the business. You know what I'm saying? So I know all the cultivation, greenhouse, outdoor, indoor. I know all the manufacturing methods. You know what I'm saying? Now we're going to dive into the retail part. And, you know, and like, and to my point that I was just saying, like, I wanted to do retail 5 years ago. I wasn't ready. You know what I'm saying? But I built up to the point where now we're ready, and now we're opening up a spot.
You know what I'm saying?
And we're gonna go from there.
So, as far as scaling the business, right? Because you started I don't know exactly like if you started with a dispensary. Like what was the first thing you actually started with?
I was a caregiver. So what that means is, you know, if we're all patients in Colorado or whatever, you would give me your paperwork and I would grow, you know, anywhere from 12 to 16 plants for you. Right. And when we first started, we only had 40 lights and it was in a 12,000 square foot building and all of our patients either had HIV or cancer or whatever. So we grew for them. So when we do, we would grow it, we would give them a portion of it, and the rest of it we would sell to dispensaries.
So what's your business model as far as scaling? Because a lot of people, like, we had a restaurant owner on, and he actually was a great interview. And the thing is, everybody might not be in the restaurant business, but I, in my personal opinion, business is business. So no matter what, the key principles of scaling a business can be applied to anything, right? And obviously, you've been able to, that's what one of the things I'm really impressed about, is that you've been able to scale your business in a very short period of time, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's not like you didn't have a business background. So, how were you able to do that? And like, what's your kind of business model, like broad range as far as like, you know, looking at opportunities, scaling, like, you know?
Yeah, so my biggest thing is like, you know, my number one thing is to build a good brand. You know what I'm saying? I feel like once the brand is strong enough, you can take the brand anywhere. You know what I'm saying? There's a couple of examples of other brands that have sold to Canadian LPs and different things like that. They don't own any of the supply chain. All they do is have a brand. You know what I'm saying? But what I'm trying to do is vertically integrate my brand. It gives it more value. You know what I'm saying? What I've learned is that, you know, nobody is, you know, like, ain't nobody going to treat your car the way you treat your car. This is your car.
Right.
They get in there, you drop something, ain't the same. If you get in there, you know what I'm saying? It's just, that's just life. That's just how I've just realized that people do things. So, you know, for us, the reason why we get cultivation in every city is because we have a Viola way that we do things, the way that we grow, the way the end product, you know what I'm saying? So that's the reason why, for me, why, you know, we continue to go state by state and acquire these licenses so that every time someone opens up a Viola package, they get an experience. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We control the experience because we control the, you know, the supply chain.
So the Harrington Group, right? It has three things under the umbrella. You got Viola Extracts. You got, is it Baby Butter?
It's just Viola.
Yeah.
Butter Baby.
Butter Baby, I'm sorry.
And then Harrington Wellness, which is our replay.
Yeah, so there's like a difference. The Butter Baby is the edible
component. Yeah, the edible's fun. They just walked into. So they make butters and coconut oil. They make olive oil. They make all kinds of stuff that you can cook with. And their vision and their message is that, you know, a lot of sick people can't eat edibles. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times people that have cancer, whether they have diabetes, you know what I'm saying? So you can't be taking all this sweet stuff, trying to get the benefits, and you messing something else up.
Yeah.
So their mission is to be able to teach people how to dosage and medicate themselves through all natural foods.
Okay. And then the Harrington Wellness is that like the oils or the creams?
That's the CBD line. So right now on Harrington Wellness, our first product line is called Replay. Or whatever, and it's really catered towards recovery, pain relief, weekend warrior athletes. You know what I'm saying?
We have
cream tincture capsules, and we have this little recovery shot, almost like a 5-hour drink, or whatever that we take that we have as well. And you know that is expanding. So we actually, you know, sell those products is online because we use hemp, straight hemp or whatever.
Yeah.
And we sell online, physical therapy clinics, small box gyms. And then we also have a program where almost like the Mary Kay or whatever. So we're allowing people from the community an opportunity to be a part of the brand and be able to sell the products.
That's dope. You know what I'm saying? I was reading when, I think 2012, you had the surgery on your knee.
Correct.
And the staph infection, and they were trying to treat you and you were like, everything wasn't working.
Right.
And you were using a cream.
Yep,
and I was like, huh? And then when I kept reading, I'm like, oh, okay. And then from there, then you started hearing more guys, Steve Kerr, right? I'm going to start using it. And then you had this meeting with David Stern that changed. That's a game changer.
Yeah, it was a game changer, man. That story was crazy, man. Like, I mean, I seen him at this thing called the Milken Conference, which is a conference they hold here in L.A. I think it's like $4,500 a ticket just to come for 3 days and just kind of learn about all different industries or whatever. And, he was on a panel talking about the effect of esports on like the NBA, NFL, because the esports guys were saying like it's gonna trump live sports. You know what I'm saying? And he was on there and he was just talking, you know, they was very witty. You know what I'm saying? So he was up there talking circles around a lot of people up there. Him, Robert Kraft was up there, the guy from Univision or whatever. So after they got done, I just went up to him. I was like, David, what's up, man? And, you know, his mind is crazy. He remembers everything, bro. Like, you got to think about, he's seen over, you know, 2,000 players come to the league. And when he saw me, it's not like I was LeBron or somebody. The first thing he said was, how's your knee?
Oh, wow.
So my knee surgery. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I never ever sat and talked with him about it ever. You know what I'm saying? He's just sharp like that. So we started talking, and that was my way of telling him, like, yeah, actually, my knee okay. I actually use cannabis, blah, 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 blah.
I can imagine his face.
And then I started telling him what I was doing, and he was just saying, you know, I hope you don't smoke all the product. He was just real funny about it. And I was like, Dave, you know, when you get a chance, I want to sit and talk with you about a couple of things. And it took me like 7 months to set up my first meeting with him or whatever. But he's so busy, I had like a 30-minute time slot to talk to him, right?
Yeah,
like the lady from that was running the Sacramento Kings was meeting after. And we was in it for an hour and a half. He was that interested in everything that I was telling him. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, let's have another meeting. We met again. And then the third time I met with him, I just asked him, I said, you mind if I just like interview you on TV?
Yeah, I watched that.
And he said, yes. And you know, when I had that, it was so funny because, you know, he's an attorney, so it's kind of hard trying to like trick him, right?
Yeah.
And you know, he's very calculated. He's not going to say, no, you know me. So when I was going through all the questions with Maverick Carter or whatever, because, you know, Aaron Terrepti had helped me put that together, we was trying to figure out ways to kind of walk him down the road to say, like, the league should just consider cannabis use. And literally my second question, bro, he said that. Like, he was just like, yeah, after talking to you, I think they really should reevaluate the policies and this, that, and the third. So I'm looking at everybody off camera like, what else we want to talk about? What else we want to talk about? You know what I'm saying? But now it was cool, man. And a lot of people always say, how much ownership did you give him in your company? Yeah. Like, you give him nothing. You know what I'm saying? He really believed it.
That conversation could change like the way leagues look at it now. Like that, I feel like that's super important.
No, yeah. I think it's uphill. You kind of know, like, okay, the tide is turning, right? So anybody that is intelligent, it's a fight that's not worth fighting, right? Even if you're not pro marijuana, you don't have to be pro marijuana or use it yourself, but it's really hard to be totally against it at this point because it's a battle that eventually you're not going to win that battle,
right?
So I think that when you see David Stern and these other guys, you know, they're obviously intelligent people and they want to be on the right side of history.
You got to remember, man, I swear, bro, like, you know, it was so funny. When I first got done, man, I was so scared to tell people what I was doing, right? Just thinking of, like, how people would react.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, since I was retired, I've been offered NBA jobs. Coach, you know what I'm saying? I've been offered TV jobs. Like, people, I'm not saying that they don't care, but it's like they're starting to come around to realizing, like, all the pharmaceutical stuff we're using, dog, like, that's the real dangerous stuff.
It's
like, we can sit here right now on camera and smoke for the next 2 weeks. Straight, I mean, back to back, you know, we can eat edibles.
We're going to pass out first.
But I guarantee we won't die. So there's five pills. There's pills out here in the world that they've given people that they give a bottle of 60, and you could take five of them and get in the hands of a child. Anything like that. They take five and they're dead.
Right.
So how do you compare the two?
Right.
It don't even make sense. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think that people are starting to really like, wake up, dog. We're not saying that everybody should smoke. We're not saying any of that. All we're saying is that it's an alternative way for people to medicate themselves without the highly addictive and the dangerous pharmaceutical drugs that are being offered. You know what I mean? We look at these commercials and it's like, you know, people are skipping and this, that, and the third. And then it's like, the commercials, like side effects, they have internal bleeding.
And they're still skipping on the beach.
Right, and they're still skipping. I'm like, that don't even make sense. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, my whole thing is I just feel like, man, sometimes, man, it's just like common sense is not always common. You know, but, you know, the reason why I like the platform that I have is that, you know, when I go to these seminars and there's these doctors up there talking about phytocannabinoids and this, that, and the third, like, you're talking to people that have no idea what you're talking about.
You got to talk to their language.
You know what I'm saying? You got to talk in their language. And that's what I've been able to do with other athletes and other entertainers that are stepping out and being advocates. I think that we are starting to humanize the plant and the whole process in general.
That's dope.
All right, so now we're going to go into our last segment and talk about the future of the marijuana industry and your company as well. All right, so now we're going to go into the future. But before we go into that, because we like to paint the real picture of entrepreneurship. I don't know if you watch like YouTube a lot, but I do. And there's a lot of entrepreneur guys on YouTube, and they talk in circles for now. You don't really know what they said. And it's all motivational, like, if you don't wake up at 5 a.m., like, you know what I mean? But it's like, okay, but what does that mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? But the good thing I like about you is that you actually started a few businesses, right? Troy, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so reading your portfolio was like, you've had businesses that haven't succeeded, right? Or out the gate. You had the restaurant in Miami, mm-hmm. and you tried a hotel in New York City?
Mm-hmm. Well, upstate New York.
Upstate.
Way upstate. Yeah. Too far.
You were talking about
what happened in that experience? I think it's important for people to understand that every business is not going
to
go straight to the moon.
No, I mean, most successful business people would tell you they took hella L's before they were successful. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, that's part of the process. You just got to manage the loss. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, in the beginning, like, I used to be so, like, you could sell me on any idea. Any idea. Like, you was passionate about it. I'm like, word, how much we can do? What? And I learned that that's not the way to operate. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the one operation was Philippe in the city. So, you know, Philippe on 59th Street, that's been over 10 years, 10, 12
Philippe
years.
Philippe Child?
Philippe Child.
Was Sebastian involved with that?
I think Bassie might have put some money up.
Okay, too. I think you remember talking about that.
And, you know, we in there every week, it's cracking. I'm like, in Miami? Oh, I got to go have. Yeah. What I learned about Miami, Miami seasonal.
That's true.
You understand what I'm saying? People go down there during the winter. They don't go down there during the summer.
It's too hot.
You understand what I'm saying? So I learned that. So now if there's any Miami business deals and it's food or all that kind of related or service, I know now. Like, and now I know that about other places too. Like, places that is a seasonal place, you got to know.
Yeah.
The hotel business, what happened with that, I think, was more of just 2008 happening is when I made the investment. It was just everything had just crashed. You know what I'm saying? I think the concept was good. I don't know of how far upstate New York maybe, but you know, they had like Jack Nicholson had signed on to do the golf course.
Oh, wow.
They had a hotel there. The hotel was the anchor, and then they were going to build homes around the golf course. So, you know, that model has worked a lot of places. You know what I'm saying? Is, you know, I know a project right now going up in Vegas like that. You know, that model has worked. So I say that deal right there didn't come to fruition. I think more of just because of the time. You know what I'm saying? Because I think the concept and everything was actually right on. You know, Marriott had just signed on to manage the hotel. So, you know, everything was coming in place with that. But I took that out. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, when I played for the Knicks or right before when I was in Golden State, I started the Protege sneaker line or whatever. That was going to be very successful, but I had bad business partners. You know what I'm saying? So that's when I started realizing I'm going to bet on myself on everything. So like a lot of times now, like it's really tough for me to get to invest in somebody else's idea. Or I got to fully understand it. Like, I mean, when I say understand, I got to understand it just like the person that's pitching it to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Before I would actually make an investment. And I think that, you know, from taking all those L's, I think that's what I learned. You know what I'm saying? Is that, you know, you can invest in other people's ideas or whatever, but, you know, if you're going to make that investment and put your hard-earned money into it, you need to fully understand how you're going to get your money out, what are all the risks involved, and what is going to be the ROI, what's the true ROI, not just something someone pitching. Because even in cannabis, I remember, like, someone pitching me, I'm in the business already. Like, I'm in it already. They came into my building in Colorado and showed me a facility they wanted to put up in Nevada, and it was going to make $30 million a year. And one thing I can tell you for sure, there's no businesses that you're starting in year with $30 million in cannabis. It's just impossible, you know, because you got to remember, and this is a gem for people to understand. It's like, you know, when you launch in a new market, it takes a while to get that customer acquisition because most people are going to the dispensary that first time. And a lot of times those dispensaries aren't going to be carrying the fire either. So you're going to go in there and you're going to spend $60 for an eighth, smoke it, and remember, your man got it on the corner for $20-$25. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's going to take you a while to realize that your man's stuff isn't tested, is not as safe as what you actually smoked in the dispensary.
Right.
It takes people time to get, you know, used to that and realizing, like, this stuff out of this dispensary is way safer for me and my family or my girl or my homeboy or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And that's when people start going back to the dispensary and realizing that smoking the other stuff is potentially dangerous. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you know, they sitting there telling me, like, we're going to make all this money in the year one of a market that's brand new. I'm like, is that possible?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's shown, if you look at the market out there, people still kind of struggling in the Nevada market. And it's been 3 years now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's just, you know, you just, you know, like I said, you just got to really educate yourself when you invest, man. And, you know, it's not easy. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, especially depending on the industry, like cannabis is so new, a lot of people are getting tricked.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I was going to say, because it's so crazy because everybody's looking at it like it's the gold rush.
Right.
Like, yo, just go to L.A. or Las Vegas and open a dispensary, you're going to make $1 million. People really are thinking like that. Right.
You can't even open it. And it's not even that easy to open it.
Right.
Like, you just can't go to just any state and just open up a dispensary. The only places right now that's kind of that open is Oklahoma, I would say, that I know of right now, that it's pretty easy to go get a license and open up. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of these markets, man, they're so regulated. And, you know, the markets that are smart to me, they make it somewhat restricted,
yeah,
just because you don't want that oversaturation, like a place like, you know, Washington and Oregon. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, that's another thing I learned. You know what I'm saying? That, you know, I'm not really going to run and be so excited to run into a state where it's unlimited licensing. You know what I'm saying? Where it's a place where it's unlimited licensing, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go partner up with one of those licensed producers, come in, give them my expertise, my SOPs, and just have them fill a Viola job. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? It don't make sense for me to go spend all the CapEx to go buy something to be competing, because then it's just a race to the bottom.
Right.
You know, I use my example of, like, in Oregon. In Oregon, when I went out there in 2016, and outdoor pounds was being sold for anywhere between a low end 900, high end 1300, 1400. By the time I harvested in 2014, the price of pounds, outdoor pounds, was like $300-$400. But you know why? Because the market was oversaturated. When I went out there in 2016, there was only 40 operators. By the time I harvested a year later, it was over 400 producers. And now you look at the market right now, they got 1 million pounds of surplus in Oregon.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So these are some of the things people got to learn and just realize, and, you know, and, you know, I got to do a better job, because I want to get more of this access and this, and not even access, but this information to other entrepreneurs that's trying to figure it out. You know what I'm saying? Because these are, like, very valuable things that they should know.
Yeah.
And kind of help, yeah, kind of steer them in the right direction so that they don't lose.
Nah, it's dope. And that would be dope if you could do that platform that you're speaking up to, because, like I said, there's so many, I'm sure people hit you up all the time, but there's so many people that want to get involved, right, in it, right? And it's like, it's not easy, A, and, you know, it's pitfalls like any other business. So, you know, I think that the more, like you said, the more you learn, right, you're going to educate yourself. And then also, it was important what you said before, as far as to say, okay, a lot of times people just want to come in and open a dispensary. Like, nah, just work your way up. Like, it takes time. Like, you know, you don't have to, it's not going to be over tomorrow.
Right.
I think everybody's in a rush, like, I need to do this right now before this blows up. Nah, just wait. Like, 2 years isn't going to kill you.
Right. And like I said, you're right, because, you know, like, and, you know, and I feel that pressure sometimes as a business owner too, where, you know, you see all this consolidation happening around me, and it's like, damn, now they got access to 100 million. And I'm still trying, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, I think that, you know, being a little patient, and I'm saying move too slow,
yeah,
but be a little patient, because I'm at the table. You know, that's all you can ask. Because I'm asking, all I needed was an opportunity. So I'm at the table. Now it's, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with this opportunity? And, you know, I feel like, you know, sticking true to what I'm doing and just building an unbelievable brand that everybody knows. Like I said, every time they pick up a package, they have a great experience. I think I'll be all right. You know what I'm saying? I think our company will be okay.
Yeah, so I read, you know, you guys, your valuation over $100 million. But you said a billion is not out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
So you got, what's the next market that you guys are trying to tackle?
So, you know, I'm going to be honest, man, like, I never came into this thing with a dollar in mind. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? It was never about, I'm going to make $1 billion. You know, a lot of times when I do interviews, they kind of walk me down that road and I fall for it every time.
Mm-hmm.
But one, I think that what I'm creating will be worth multi-$1 billion, not just one.
Yeah,
one is too small, right? But the reason why I think that is because the good and how many people we're going to help is the reason why we're going to have that kind of valuation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like with Viola, like, I'm trying to make this brand a brand of the people. You know what I'm saying? And I got a couple different ideas of trying to figure out just how to get regular people involved and invested in Viola. Let them take ownership.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's the key, is like having customers feel like they own the brand. You know what I'm saying? Like I always reference the Puff and Ciroc. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Puff has created an environment with Ciroc that people feel like they are a part of that lifestyle.
Once they buy it.
Right? It's like you pick up that bottle, like you went in there looking
for
money.
We got a good time.
You pick up that bottle, you got a silk joint on it. You like that.
Cali about to jump out.
You know what I mean? So I learned that from him, and I saw that. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I think that he was able to do that because he's very authentic in his message, and he was consistent. You know what I'm saying? And that's what, you know, that's what I'm working on. And like I said, you know, with this incubator program and different things like that, I think we're going to be that brand that everybody's going to want to support because they're going to be able to take ownership in it.
Let me ask, before we wrap it up, I just had a question. So they just passed the SAFE Act. Well, they didn't pass it, but they just passed the first step, SAFE Banking Act.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's not familiar, it still is a major problem because marijuana is not legal on a federal level, even though it's legal on some state levels, right? So a lot of banks, most banks, don't really want to do business with marijuana companies because it's a gray line and they can get in trouble from the feds, right? How have you dealt with that as far as like, and what do you think the future, how do you foresee the future in that? Because that plays a major part, in my opinion, because once the banks legalize it, then that's kind of like, you know.
Right, then people can get loans.
Exactly.
And people can potentially get into the space. But not black people once again, because you know we got student loans.
Yeah, a lot of debt.
It's gonna be tough, but whatever. But you know, when I first started, I had no banking. Obviously, credit unions have come around, so every state I bank with a credit union, and then there's also a third party company that I work with, also named PayQuick, that they're pretty much like the middleman between the producers and the bank, and they have a whole, you know, due diligence and a process that, you know, the banks, the credit unions are comfortable with being able to bank. But, you know, the banking is smart. Like, the credit unions, they making a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? They charging $2,500 a month just to hold the bank account.
Yeah, wow, that's
great. You know what I'm saying? Let alone the fees on all the money that actually comes in. So banks realize it's a $1 billion opportunity for them too, but it's just that the federal government has their hands tied, because other than that, believe me, they would be all in it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? If they could.
Yeah, nah, that's dope, man. Now, you want to, anything else you want to talk about, Troy?
No, you got it.
Yeah, now, we want to thank you for coming in. Also, before we wrap it up, it's important, I think, for people, to follow their passion, right? Because, like you said, you're passionate about this. It's not just about the money. It's not even about the money. It's to help people, right? Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people, and even we've made that mistakes in the past with other things that we're successful now with the podcast because we actually like doing it.
Yeah.
We're passionate about it. But we've done stuff in the past where, honestly, we just did it for money. And it didn't work. It never worked. It never worked.
That's a fact.
You know what I'm saying? Whenever you do something, it's hard to wake up every morning and do something if you don't really care about what you're doing, right? So I think that that's encouraging. And then also, it's very important, first impressions and work ethic, too. So I was just talking off camera. So if anybody followed the podcast, you know that I went to like 8 different high schools in high school for basketball. But I went to school in Florida for a little bit at IMG Academy. So when I first met Al, this was years ago, and he probably doesn't remember, but one thing I always remember, because he was in IMG training, he was a professional. So if anybody's not familiar, IMG is one of the top prep schools in the country.
National
champs. They actually just won.
National champs.
So they have pros that come in as well, like football and basketball at the time.
Every sport.
Yeah. So he was there. He's one of the pros that was working out. And we used to run pickup games every once in a while. So I can't say I had a lot of interactions with him. I had some interactions with some other people. Harold Jameson.
Yeah.
Real good guy. Harold's like my guy. Like Harold Jameson.
Clemson.
He's different. Clemson.
Nah, John Wells. John Wells too.
John Wells too, my guy.
I remember getting them stories. Like, yeah. I just met John Wells.
Yeah.
Really?
Harold Jameson, man. He's the first person. So I missed my school bus one day, right? So I'm like, he's like, what's up, man? I go to school, I'll give you a ride. He had a drop top Lexus and he had the air conditioner on full blast. I'm like, why do you have the air conditioner if we got the top down? He's like, because it's cold. It's got to get colder. So he's the first person I've ever seen to have a full blown air conditioner in a drop top.
That's why I got the AC. Kind of guy
so nah, cool. Yo, if you know anything about Harold Jameson, so when you, like, he sweat at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, like a mule.
Yeah, like, bro, the drop of a hat, bro. So, like, he was the type of dude when we used to work out, bro. Like, during the workout, he used to have to always wipe the court. That's how much he was. He'd go through an hour workout, bro. No BS. In an hour workout, he'd go through 14 shifts. And I always had weight issues. Like, bro, how are you overweight? Like, what? If he was playing, but he at that time, that's when they don't play with the body fat and all that type of stuff. But he would have issues with his weight, and he used to sweat I'm guaranteeing he was driving me.
Fat, you
went
at the free.
Yeah, shout out to him. Wherever you are in the world right now, man, shout out to you. But I was saying that, you know, one thing I'll never forget is that, you know, Al, he always worked hard. He was a hard worker. Like, I remember Joel, so the head basketball, he used to always reference him, like, you see how hard Al works? You got to work like that. That's how hard. He always worked hard, and he always smiled. Like, he was never in a bad, I never saw him in a bad mood. He always had a smile on his face, right? So it's funny what people remember, because that was 15 years ago, and I still remember that, right? So I say that to say, you never know. Al has come full circle. Now he's on our podcast, right? So it's important to just be a good person, right? And to set that example. You never know who's watching you.
Exactly. This is like,
no, it's true evidence. No, it's real. Right? It's reality. Yeah. And you never know when it can come back, right? Yeah. So I just...
I always tell people, man, it's just so much easier to be cool. Like, it's so much, like, it takes no effort to be cool. It takes no effort. Somebody walk in the room and give them a head nod. It takes no effort.
Yeah.
Like, you ain't got to go out your way or nothing. Just acknowledge people. Just be cool. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I've never had no issues nowhere I've been. You know what I'm saying? I live in L.A. and people getting robbed here in New York and I've never had security, nothing. Atlanta, Miami, I go anywhere. I go any hood, I go, because I'm cool. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, what's up?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm approachable. And it's just, and to me, it's just like, it takes effort to be a jerk. You know what I'm saying? And you know, for me, like, I've had a lot of success that way. And I tell people all the time, like, when people, you know, are always asking me about, you know, different things and, like, vetting me. And I'm like, dog, you could vet me with anybody. I have no enemies. There's nobody walking the earth right now. They got anything bad to say about me, bro, because I'm regular, I'm fair, and, you know, my word is my bond, so I said I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, period.
That's what you say, Shaq, right? Keep your calm and clean, right?
No, you got to keep your calm and clean. Another one, too, Chauncey Billups. So yeah, he was down there, too, and I never forget my dad. So when my dad, we took me to school, and everybody knows him. He's Chauncey Billups. I didn't know who he is. So he walked up to my dad, and he's like, he introduced himself. He was like, you know, I'm Chauncey Billups. So my dad is always impressed to this day because it's like he took the time to walk up to a stranger that obviously knew who he was, but he treated everybody the same, right? Yeah. So I say that to say in business and just in life in general, I think it's completely underrated just to be a good person.
But yeah, in addition to that, it's like look at the success that the two individuals you're saying have had post-NBA.
And it's no coincidence, right?
You know, right. They've treated people with respect and honor, and look at the success they had post.
No, you're right. You're right.
Those two things go hand in.
Do you have any initiatives or how can the people contact you? How can the people contact Viola?
We got some big announcements coming up. Hopefully the first one is June 1st. We on schedule to get that done. So we're potentially bringing somebody on to the company that's gonna be a huge name for what we're doing. You can follow us on Instagram at Viola.lifestyles. Follow me at Al Harrington 3, and just, you know, we obviously do everything through social media. That's the world we live in.
You know
what I'm saying? And, you know, our website, we're revamping that as well. We got some merchandise about to hit. So, you know, we just continue just to move. So I would just say, just continue to support us and follow us. And when you get a chance, you know, buy Viola. Always open to on social media, please hit me and let me know what you think about it. You know what I'm saying? I've had some bad reviews. I had mostly great, but you know, when it's a bad one, I just got something to say. Trying to get you to try it again. But we just moving. We working. We building. And you know, if you have any cool ideas and different things like that, and you're in the states that we're operating in, you know, reach out.
Appreciate that.
Troy, before we go, can you just talk about our Patreon?
Yeah, so Patreon is, for those of you listening, you know that it's our way for us to connect with some people who want extra content. It also allows us an avenue to do things like this, you know, come to LA and touch with people who are doing things in business and in real estate that can help everyone. So one of the things I was saying was like, he's having a tough time finding people. Well, you just spoke to a bunch of people right now who are probably thinking like, hey, I can help out. So Patreon allows us to do that. We have five different tiers. You know, that private pay program is something that is important. You know, so if you feel like supporting us, great. If you don't, we love you the same. You know, it allows us to do things like this.
Yeah, proud to pay. The marathon continues.
Of course.
Nipsey was our guy. Everybody knows that. We reference him every episode. But, you know, like I said, I always say, we're going to give you the information for free. But if you would like to financially support the podcast, that's the way. We also have merch. Our merch shop is up. on the website, earnyourleisure.com. So make sure you got that. We got Troy got the Assets Over Liability shirt.
Right now. Season two coming though. It's coming.
Yeah, season we're gonna two drop coming. A whole new collection. Whole and then we wanna just thank you guys as well. Like I said, to be, you know, a couple of months in and to be ahead of Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and Susie Orman, and we just did it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, nah, we didn't have a crazy budget. Yeah, we didn't have any budget.
I was like, yo, we just passed all the sharks on Shark Tank.
No, we did. But then it just shows how hungry the culture is for financial literacy and financial empowerment, right? So we're going to keep giving you guys the information, and we appreciate your support. Before I leave, I always do a book tip. So my book tip this week is actually the first book that I've ever read when I was getting into finance, like 18 years old, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Everybody knows that book. I actually had like the whole thing.
Shout out to Mike. Shout out to Mike.
Michael.
Shout out to Mike. Yeah. We had that. That's a great book. But the first person I heard had read it was Mike. And I was like, the first I heard.
Mike who?
He's on SoundCloud. He's on SoundCloud.
He's
Big Mike.
Big Mike.
So when he said that, I was like,
his name is not Mike. Big Home. Shout out to the Big
Home. Yeah, when he said he read it, I was like, wow. That inspired me to go read it. So
shout out to Big Homie. That is my book tip of the week. And thank you for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.